Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. We're coming at you. This is February 7th that we're recording this. So we're well into 2023. Today is a special day because I have one of my Seattleites here. I rarely have Seattleites here on the show, so I'm super excited. We got James Daynard with us from Heaton Daynard Real Estate. James is a true pro up here in the Puget Sound area. A lot of experience to go over. So James, thank you for hopping on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Gabe.
Absolutely. I told you before we got on here, we like to start with stories. We like to hear how people kind of got into real estate in the first place. So Why don't you take us back to the beginning? How'd you get started in real estate?
So I got into real estate. I was actually a senior in college. I was going to school at University of Washington Business School.
Go Dogs. And,
yeah, go Dogs, right? And I was also working at Red Robin as a waiter, kind of paying for school right up here in Bellevue, Washington. And my senior year, I had just done an internship in my junior year with an elevator salesman, which is actually one of the most interesting sales jobs I've ever been experienced in.
For sure. That's
phenomenal.
Kind of a hard thing to sell is elevators. Like, there's only so many elevators out there that need to be bought.
Yeah, but I randomly worked with the guy that was just slinging all of them. It was like he was the ultimate sales guy. And so I had done that internship. And in my senior year, I was like, okay, I really want to get into more practicability of where I wanted to go in my career. And I started looking into like medical device sales, pharmaceutical sales, but I was really focused on medical device sales. And my business partner today, we were actually roommates about 18 years ago when I was in college, and he had sold a car to owner of a local investment company called that was out of Kirkland, Washington, that actually helped investors go buy properties at the auction. And then they had an off-market department where they would provide leads, and the sales guys will go out, knock on the door, secure the deals, and wholesale them off to their company with kind of set pricing at that point. And so when I was a senior, I was like, well, hey, I need more sales experience. I just done this free internship. And this one, I was like, well, this is kind of like an internship because I have no experience in this, but I had opportunity to also get paid. And so I really took the job in real estate out of just trying to learn business and learn how to sell. Because the job was grabbing a stack of leads, going out and knocking on the doors and asking if they wanted to sell.
Oh man, that is the hardest part of real estate, is actually going to door knocking. I never did it myself, but man, that's I always have a lot of respect for people that door knock, because that's rough.
Oh, it's a rough gig, but it's a very rewarding gig. And once you get, you know, after that the first year was really painful for me. You know, it was like, I was going to school full time. I was working 30 hours a week on the weekends to pay for school at the restaurant, and then I would knock doors after school for 4 to 5 hours a day, or sometimes 6 hours a day.
Jesus.
I would just get done with my study, and then go get in the car and go bang on doors. And it was a brutal first 6-9 months. It was I lost money and gas money. People were yelling at me on the porch. It was like, and I had no idea what I was doing. And not only that, I just didn't know anything about real estate. They didn't really give us any training. But as I started doing it, I got kind of more addicted to it, and the housing, and like looking at the numbers and looking at properties. And by the time I had graduated college, I closed one deal, and it was, I think I made a whopping $1,800. It was a really big deal I had this, because of the rejection, it made me want to push harder. And so once I graduated college, I started really, or was getting towards the tail end of my college, I decided not to go interview with all these companies I've been talking to, and just kind of focus on this and say, I'm going to do this for 1 year.
Wow. And glutton for punishment.
Glutton for punishment. But it was also because I kind of grew up in real estate. Prior to that, I had bought my first piece of land at 17.
Oh, okay.
And
land. And interesting.
I should have kept it. It was a lot on the Columbia River that I paid $18,000 for.
Oh.
And then 9 months later, I sold it for like 26, which was huge when you're 17 years old, right?
Now it's worth what, 500,000, a million, something like that.
Yeah, I would have put a house myself on it.
Right.
and uh, but it did get, you know, it got me going down in that road. So I had always had this passion for real estate, and I just dug into, hey, what do I do? How do I fix this? Or how do I, you know, what is a HUDs? And trained myself essentially. And then once that happened and I went full time, I quit my waiter job, I was done with school, and I just went full on steam. And then we kind of took fire to where we went from doing 1 to 2 deals a month to we were doing 15 to 20 deals a month.
Wow.
And we kind of became the off market guys during that era. This is in 2005 and 6 and 7.
Yep.
And we were known to find good property. And then the wheels came off. We actually, in 2008, we had branched off, started our own business, and then subprime mortgages collapsed.
Yeah.
30 days later. And we had just spent all of our money on our office furniture, a lease. And I got totally smoked. You know, I had a bunch of flips going on, some rental properties. And in 2008, it was kind of like all our money was there. And everyone had kind of exited the market. And that's really where we kind of turned the corner and excelled, because we just didn't give up. And during that time, a lot of people left the business. And so there was a huge playing field for us to kind of run on. It was definitely a grind from 2008 to 2010. And since then, we've gone from off market guys to owning a brokerage to lending money around the Washington State as hard money lenders. And we're big advocates on keeping property and building wealth. And we have over 1,000 doors now in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow, so that's great.
It's been a long journey.
Yeah, for sure. And that is one of the upsides that I don't feel a lot of people take note of. Well, you know, we're going into a recession now. Things are we're kind of not the extent of the 2008 crash, but we're in a depression now in the market. But if you just keep pushing through, because so many people are leaving the market, it's you will eventually keep finding deals. I feel like that's one of the things that make a successful investor successful, is just not giving up. And you're a good example of that. You went through 2008, you went through door knocking, all those things to get to where you are today. So love to hear that. And it's funny that you said you were a Red Rob. You worked at Red Robin. I did the same thing when I was at UW. So we got a similar background there.
Oh, you know, Red Robin's a good place for you to learn how to be of service to people.
Yeah.
You were at the Dirty Bird too?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. I did it for, it was during the summers, and I did it for 2 summers. It was good. I remember one time, it was during spring. It was like the worst memory at Red Robin. It was during Easter, and I dropped a Dr. Pepper on this girl's like dress, and I was just like mortified. It was a horrible experience. But yeah, you definitely learn how to sell and or how to at least, you know, work with people in the service industry like that. So you went, it was a huge growth period for you guys. You went from 1 to 2 to, you said, 15 to 20 per month. What was the catalyst there? Was it just the fact that you guys were the last man standing in the market, or what kind of changes did you guys make in your operations to get that scale?
Well, we made some major changes, and it wasn't just because we were the last man standing, because honestly, I didn't want to stand there anyways. I just didn't have a choice. It was because 2008 was crickets. Like,
yeah,
there was nothing going on. And but just like when we first started knocking doors, it was like, hey, I got to figure this out. And so we just had to grind and work harder. But then what we also needed to do was figure out, well, what's the solution for this? The biggest issue and why there was crickets and no transactions was going on is because there was way too much fear around real estate. And everyone had this concept that like real estate was leprosy. Like you could have had a house for a dollar and people were like, don't give that to me. and they just did not want it. It had this huge negative, everyone had negative feelings about it. And so what we had to do was figure out how to switch the perception and also figure out how to mitigate risk for people, because people were just too freaked out. And that's where we made a big step, was we went from just being off market guys to we launched our brokerage. And the whole reason I started the brokerage was to actually help clients mitigate risk, because what we started offering clients, if they bought a deal through us, we would, because we were active investors and flipping properties ourselves, In that market, we were one of the rare people doing it at that time, is we would offer inside of our listing service that we would help our clients consult, get them, you know, specs, referrals on contractors, and help them mitigate the construction process. Mm. And by providing more service, it actually put our business on steroids in 2009 and 10, whereas a lot of people just didn't want to get involved because we helped, we realized what the consumer needed, and we started providing those services, like access to capital, like how do you get your hard money set up? So we started our own lending business. So we were
and
able
the
to
consumer that you're talking about right now is investors.
Yes,
other investors.
My consumers, all investors. I only sell to investors, but thank you for pointing that out. So for just investors, it was about figuring out what their problems were, and then we built businesses around that. So it was access to money. We would fund their deals, mitigate risk. We would get them contractors. We'd show them how we would do it, and we would offer free teaching as a part of our listing service. And by providing these values, it allowed people to kind of get in and out of deals and feel good about purchasing. And it really, really changed our whole trajectory of our business. Yeah. And that was the main difference in the growth that we did.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is so important. I didn't do a lot of flips. I did a couple flips, but there's so many things that need to go right for a flip to actually work out. And if you don't have the right tools in place, if you don't have the capital that you need, if you don't have contractors, you know, contacts with other contractors in the area, it can really be a tough thing. So I understand, or I can see why that would really help your business grow, is being able to provide those tools to the investors in the market. On the seller side, when you guys were speaking with sellers, it sounds like you would do flips. I'm assuming you'd also do wholesales, and then you would also list them, I'm assuming, because of, you know, you own a brokerage. When you approach the sellers, how did you broach the subject of them either wholesaling a property or listing it on the open market?
Yeah. And back then, it's a lot different than the seller sentiment today.
Mm-hmm.
It was back where people were like, I just want this thing gone. Ah. And so the thing back then was there was so much inventory in the market. If we were to pulled up a quarter mile around any house, there could be hundreds of homes for sale.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of these sellers wanted a deal today. So we would talk to them about both options. Like, hey, you know, what's your condition? What's the as-is value? If we put this up for sale, the average market time was like 6 to 7 months back then. Mm. And people did not want to go through that. So we would provide them with two options. Like, here's what your house is worth today. And then this is what we can buy it for. And because properties that were fixtures were selling so low on market, I mean, there was tons of deals on market. I mean, off market was kind of secondary deals, in my opinion. There were so many low sales at that point, we could easily justify our offer to where we were really paying people close to market value minus the commissions. It was more about the strategic plan that we put behind it. Yeah. So it was easy for us to give them the offer. The hard part was finding properties that weren't over leveraged, because 90% of the stuff was leveraged.
Yeah, 90%. Yeah.
And so you can't buy that without going through a short sale, which we did a ton of short sales. I hate that business. I
tried it once and I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing that again.
it was miserable. People were like, oh, did you just make a ton of money on short sales? I'm like, no, we didn't. We made very small fees and it was a lot of work. And, you know, eventually, like 2010, I just gave them all, we just had a company come take them all. I was like, I can't do this anymore. But it was just honest conversations and showing them market data allowed us to give them offers where people were happy to get in our cash quick close deals.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm not familiar with at least the residential side in Seattle today. Are things still like flying off the shelves, or is it cooled down a little bit?
It's definitely cooled down. What we've seen over the last 6 months is about a 15 to 20% drop of peak pricing.
Okay.
In the peak, what I define that is like February, March is where it kind of hockey sticked up really high. It's definitely came down, and now we're at a flat point. It's been flat for the last 60 days, but I've seen the market really hit the accelerator in the last 10 days.
Really?
Oh, we've sold. I mean, we were running like 40% pending during this whole flat time. And typically we have about 60 to 70 listings going at a time.
Oh, wow.
And right now, I think we just got up to 60, 70% pending, and properties that we had on market for, you know, we took a little breather for a couple of weeks, put them back on, that we couldn't sell for 60 days at a certain price are now getting multiple offers.
Interesting.
And so they're getting bid up above what we were listed at in December. We've just seen a little bit of rate drop and buyers are jumping. I mean, we're moving stuff pretty actively right now.
Interesting. What is, I should know this because I was actually just looking at getting a loan recently, but I don't, what's the current rate right now for residential?
Right now it's about 6.25. It can go down. It depends on what product you want. And that's important for everybody to be doing is talking to the mortgage broker, figure out do they have a 5/1 arm, 7/1 arm? Is there, are you in a jumbo? Jumbos are still below your single family. So sometimes it can actually make sense to shop up a little bit. Like you could go buy a property for $75,000 more, put you in a jumbo and actually have a lower mortgage payment. Hmm. And so it's, they're kind of hovering right around that 6 mark. Okay. Hey, but what we're seeing is stability in the rate, whereas the last 6 months it's been going up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
And really what the market needed was just stability, people to feel okay about it. And now it's kind of becoming normal and rates are kind of settling down right now.
That's good. In terms of, you know, going forward, are you guys 100% focused on flips residential, or are you guys on the commercial side too? What does it kind of look like in the next year for you?
So we like to build our businesses around the opportunities. You know, right now where I see the most opportunities is the larger multis. We've been able to get a lot better buys on. We've always been apartment buyers, but we haven't been able to really pull the trigger that much the last 24 months because the cap rates were just so compressed.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now where we're seeing the most amount of opportunity is in dirt and then single family houses where you can build daddies in the back as well. Mm. Because as the market's cooled down, the big hitter builders have really cooled down.
Yeah.
And so the demand for dirt has dropped rapidly to where we're seeing like 35% to 40% lower pricing on dirt than we saw 9 months ago. And because people have gotten kind of cold feet on it, it's created that we can actually buy some good single family rental properties on developable dirt and just land bank those for a 3 to 5 year play on those. Or also just getting opportunities as flippers. Like I liked that flip build in the back, but the builders were outbidding us by 10% on our margin. And so now there's a lot of opportunities in those areas. I actually just locked one up under contract in Maple Leaf, Seattle last week. And it's probably $250,000 lower than I would have paid for it 10 months ago.
Wow. That's a big drop. Well, I guess it depends on the purchase price or the total price, but like a big drop.
Well, it's probably from six. We sold two properties for $675,000 and we just picked it up for $430,000.
Wow. That's great.
So it's, there's opportunity. So we just like to build systems around where we see the opportunity coming. I do think we're not commercial guys, but I am really digging into that because I know the lending space is really tough behind it right now. Yeah. And I've heard that a lot of people aren't going to get renewed. So we are looking in that space as well. You know, wherever it's hard is where we really actually go because that's where the best deals are.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the best way to create any business is to look at the pain and then solve that pain. So sounds like you guys are on the right track. So let's just dig a little bit into the weeds a second. This is a short podcast and so we can't go too far, but I do want to ask about finding deals because that is the thing that a lot of new investors, even veteran investors struggle with the most is finding good deals. So when it comes to sourcing leads, sourcing new deals, what is the most effective ways that you guys have found in this market today?
Well, we like to self-source, but we do network with a lot of different brokers and wholesalers out there as dependable buyers. But the what has worked really well for us over the last 6 to 9 months is we use a company called Easy Button Leads. Hmm. And what they do, it's a professional calling service. Because right now the market's a little weird. There's not that many opportunities, but people's scenarios are changing. The economy is moving a little bit. People kind of rushed into their housing and bought a house they didn't really want. And now the markets kind of came down, so they want out. And so we're using that because we can get mass coverage and we can call up to 30, 40,000 people a month for very low cost, where our average cost of lead is about $26 an appointment.
Wow.
Which is really low compared to like direct mail or even door knocking. You know, door knocking appears free a lot of times, but you have so much time invested in, it's not free.
That's not free at all.
And so that's what we've been doing is using the call rooms to where we can get really good coverage. We work in Kingston, which Pierce County, across all three counties. Each caller costs us around like $1,400. and they usually produce 20 to 30 leads a month for us.
$1,400 a month. Okay.
And then what we do is the stuff that we're really targeted on, we do direct calls in our office or door knock those. So we hit the coverage bucket, and that's been giving us a substantial amount more leads. And it's actually going in. There's so many leads coming in. We're actually having our brokerage now start to service those as well, as far as like listing appointments.
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah. I'm actually, so I'm only on the commercial side. We've been doing a lot of mailers, but we're backing off on the mailers because we're not seeing as much volume from them. And so we're focusing in more on texting and calling. And so that's interesting that you say you guys are really focused in on the call centers. You said Easy Button Leads is the call center that you use.
Yeah. And their rates are, you get a full-time caller for that price, where a lot of them, that's like a 20 hour a week caller. And then they use your scripts, they drop it into your CRMs, and then we have an inbound call or our office caller then calls. As soon as we get the appointment, he's on the phone qualifying the appointment, making sure it's still good, and then setting it for our closers to go out there and talk to him.
Very cool. All right. Well, it is, we have crushed through our time, so it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Starts with books or any form of education. Give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and one for real estate specific.
Real Estate by the Numbers by David Meyer and Jay Scott is a great book that came out last year. Breaks down the basics of underwriting any type of deal. It's simple, easy, and you get a grasp of what the numbers actually mean.
Real Estate by the Numbers. All right.
Yeah, great book. Very simple to read. I actually gave it to all my sales guys in my office. And non-real estate professional book is there's a what is it called? It's oh my gosh. Hold on.
It's turning around, looking in this desk.
Here he goes. This is actually one I read just recently, and I really liked it. It was How to Make Big Happen, How to Live, Work, and Give Big for CEOs, entrepreneurs, and leaders. Cool. So that's just more, it is a really good job just talking about how to communicate with your staff, your team, and empower them and motivate them without money. Nice. Motivate them in positive ways.
Nice. I love it. How to Make Big Happen and Real Estate by the Numbers. Good recommendations. Moving on, this next one is for your younger self. So let's go back to the James who was still working at Red Robin, going to UW. Go to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Pay attention to the market outside of what you're doing now, but, read about the economy, not just the market.
Nice. That is good advice and something I'm kind of, taking in myself. And I've just been kind of noticing myself, looking a little bit more at the headlines in, you know, New York Times and Wall Street Journal and stuff. So that's good advice. I like that one. Moving on, this next one is about your business. The people in your business form the backbone of your business. So what are the first three positions that you hired for in your company? And would you do it differently if you started today? Not discounting the actual person that you hired, I'm sure they're great hires, but what are the actual three positions, the first three positions that you hired for?
First position was transaction coordinator and manager, because we need to be hyper organized, make sure you're in compliance, and then to help push deals through and make sure they close. That is the backbone to all of our companies. The second people we hired were salespeople, because that was when the market wasn't doing that well. So we wanted all commission, low cost at that point. And then the third person we hired was a bookkeeper and account, and which is that bookkeeper is actually turned into our CFO at our company. He's been with us 16 years now.
Nice.
So hired a great bookkeeper. He learned the basics, and now he's given us all the financial tools we need. Honestly, those are the three most important to me. I don't know if I would change them at all.
Perfect. Transaction coordinator, sales, and bookkeeper. That is a good way to start any real estate business right there. Moving on, and this one is about the U.S. It's a big place, a lot of opportunity out there. What is the metro you're most excited about investing in today?
Seattle, King County. It's the reason being is I'm a backyard investor. The growth there is unlimited. I look at, you know, we're mirroring San Francisco. It's got a lot of runway there. We have better tax situation. The tech, which is, that's big business, is expanding. Even with them slowing down, they're still expanding out. And it's also what I know. I like to invest in stuff I know. If something goes wrong, I can put out fires a lot easier here than I could in a different state.
Absolutely. I own pretty much only out of state, and I've actually been looking in more in state just because of those exact reasons. Like, I'd like, if you can, you know, get in your car and go meet somebody that's on your team, it's a lot better than having to take a flight anywhere. So good advice. Moves us on to the next question. We actually already covered this a little bit, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Finding deals, it's the most important part of a real estate business. So what is your favorite way to find good deals?
Direct sale, direct calling, cold calling. We're self-gen guys. We like to go find our own property. So we're direct to seller guys. Also, just networking with direct to seller guys and making sure you have a really good relationship, not just a name on the list. That will get you deal flow all day long. Like, we're constantly talking to our wholesaler partners about what we're looking for and seeing what we can help them with to get us more deal flow. So build the relationship with wholesalers and it will go a long ways.
Perfect. I love it. All right. We all have those highlight reels in our portfolio, those specific deals that we look back on and we're like, that was great. So give me just the highlight reel of the deal that you, that stands out the most in your mind. What happened? What was it? And how'd you get it?
Well, the most recent one would have been last year. It's a deal we sourced on market, sitting on market for 9 months. No one wanted this thing. It was actually a house I knocked on back in 2008 and it got foreclosed on.
And it went like, I remember this deal.
Oh, it was like an investor killer. It went through three investors over a 10-year period.
Oh, wow.
And or it was even longer than that. But sitting on market, we offered. It was listed for 3.1. We ended up buying it for 2.75, actually. It was a 6,000 square foot gutted new construction house in Bellevue, more Clydehill-ish area, but not A+. Yeah. We put $1.2 million into the renovation, and we had performed the thing at 4.75. And then with the rates, it kind of hit the accelerator and we closed it. And it was a 9-month turn and we closed it at 6.5.
Wow. It was absurd. That's a single family house, right?
Single family house.
And for people who don't know, Clydehill up in Bellevue, it's like, you know, Microsoft is in Bellevue. Huge companies are in Bellevue. That is the premier area to buy a real estate. So that is not normal to Seattle, to the Seattle market, but that is definitely a high price point for sure.
Yeah. And the previous owner had done such weird stuff to the property. No one could wrap their brain around it. It was just sitting there rotting for years, like forever. And I finally was just like, and I don't usually like to play in that expensive of flips. But the numbers worked, and it was a hitter.
Hey man, it sounds like you guys knocked that one out of the park. That's awesome. All right, I'm gonna move us on a little bit. This one is about mentors. None of us are islands. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. So, who is one mentor who has contributed significantly to your career today?
I mean, I think one of the most important mentors and business is just my business partner, Will Heaton. You know, I think we kind of mentor each other, but he was definitely, I worked underneath him for the first couple of months or, you know, I'd say half year. It's just having that person to actually do the work with you and build and bounce things off. It really can help make you efficient and grow. And then other than that, you know, I am a bigger pockets guy. So one guy that I love talking to right now is Dave Meyer, my co-host on the market and the data. That he nice. Like he teaches me about data and the inside the number stuff.
Nice. I love it. Well, yeah, and that's it's great you find a partner like that. I totally agree. Having somebody that you can just you know, bounce ideas off of in your partnership is so beneficial to just giving you the motivation to move forward. So love to hear that. And that rounds us out. It brings us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. You've given us a lot of good advice, a lot of good things to think about. So I'm sure people want to reach out and get in contact with you. Is there anything you guys are doing right now that you could highlight for the listeners? And then how can people get in contact with you?
So we at Heat Data Real Estate, we put a lot of free education. We just want to educate investors. So on our YouTube channel at Project RE, we do a lot of free education on there, or on Instagram at JDaneFlips. We're posting investment advice, how we're looking at projects in real time, like real time fires that I'm putting out, gets documented, put out there. And then if for trends, check us out on the Market podcast through Bigger Pockets. Really cool group of speakers. We're talking about trends and data points. You really got to check as you're starting to perform out of deals.
Right on. So I will put I'll put all James's URLs in the show notes. So if you guys want to get in contact with him, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down the full description, and in there you can find James's URLs. So that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. If you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe at therealestateinvestingclub.com. Other than that, hope you guys have an absolutely fantastic week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form, fill that out, and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.